Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we speak with writers about writing. And I'm very excited to have my guest today, all the way from New York City, which isn't that far away. Tom Coffey. How you doing, Tom?
I'm okay. How are you? I'm cold too. I think it's not good in the Northeast right now.
No, and it was like we were just right before we recorded. I woke up this morning and my phone says it's 21. I'm like, what do you mean? Talking about it shouldn't be. It's just an such an sometimes it's just such an extreme drop. Well, I wasn't ready for that. Yeah, I'm up in the mountains in Maryland, so but it's cold. It's real
Yeah.
cold, and it's really only it's not even. I mean, it's just Thanksgiving. So anyway, well, Tom, I'm so glad you're here. Tom is a longtime journalist who has worked for some of the leading news organizations in the country, including the Miami Herald. I used to live in Miami. The Los Angeles Herald Examiner, Newsday, New York Newsday, and the New York Times, which is, the gray lady. We all know that one. I read it every Sunday still. He grew up in Staten Island, where he went to Catholic schools. Ooh, I did too. We have a lot in common. A graduate of Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University, he later attended film school at the University of Southern California. His first novel, The Serpent Club, was published in 1999. He is a member of Mystery Writers America. His other titles include Miami Twilight, Blood Alley, Bright Morning Star. And you live in Lower Manhattan, and we're going to talk about the new book. And you live in Lower Manhattan with your wife and your daughter, and that's cool. I've never lived in Manhattan. I was living like Queens and like Hoboken. I never, but I worked in the city the whole time I was there. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to
Feel
be
like I
here.
know you from, yeah, I'm happy to have you. So the new book is called Public Morals. What's this book? Tell us about the book.
The book is about New York City. It's set in New York in two places, in New York in 1982, the crime-ridden New York of 1982, and then the crime-ridden New York of 2022. In the first part of the book, a corrupt cop named Terrence Devine is caught with his hand in the cookie jar, almost literally, and he is also then linked to the murder of a sex worker. He is caught up in a corruption investigation into his own unit, and he's forced to testify against some of the people in his own unit. Parallel investigation goes on into the murder of the sex worker. He is ultimately implicated in that, and he is sent to prison for killing her. Then that's the crime-ridden 1982 part. The crime-ridden 2022 part, his daughter Sheila, who has not had any contact with him since he went to prison, gets in touch with him. She is a documentary filmmaker, and her distributor thinks it would be a really good idea to do this movie about her father, who is still proclaims his innocence. She's really skeptical about that, but she begins to investigate the case, and she begins to doubt his guilt, and the question she raises they stir up a hornet's nest and put her own life in danger.
Yeah, and it's I love that. I love the dual timeline because New York, as you know, well, you are a New Yorker. You can see the city has shifted over the decades, but it's still at its. There's wonderful parts about it, but it's still. It can be a dangerous place. Whatever decade you're in, just in different ways. But you brought a lot of that in, so that's one of my questions actually. So starting from the beginning, how did you come up with the story? Is it based on anything in real life? Is it totally made up? I mean, you are a journalist. I mean, I'm sure you were exposed to a lot of news things, but is this, how did you come up with this idea?
Story is actually based on corruption investigations that went on in the New York Police Department in the 1970s. It was Frank Serpico was the guy you may recall who blew the whistle. And I always encourage people now, especially as I'm promoting the book, to both read the book Serpico by Peter Moss and to see the movie with a very young Al Pacino. They're both really interesting. And that corruption, he blew the whistle on a department that was. If the cops were not corrupt, they looked the other way. That went all the way up the chain of command. They just didn't want to hear about it. Everything's fine. Nobody's on the take. Yada yada yada. And the department itself, though, was as somebody who grew up in New York City, and I grew up with a lot of cops. Everybody knew that a lot of those guys had their hands out all the time, and something needed to be done about it. The cop who is caught by an investigative body called the Knapp Commission, a cop named William Phillips, was caught, basically shaking down everybody he, encountered. He was forced to flip, and he testified before the commission. The hearings were televised. It was riveting in New York City. But Phillips was subsequently implicated in the murder of a prostitute and convicted. He always maintained his innocence until a few years back, he finally showed some remorse. He wanted to get out of prison. He was old, he was dying, he wanted to get out of prison. But there are a lot of people, I would say myself included, who think he was set up and that he really didn't do it. But he had stirred up and antagonized so many people that they wanted to send him teach him a lesson and send a message to anybody else who had the idea of doing what he did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think any police can, if there's that element, that can be that element, because there's power. They have power, and absolute power corrupts whatever, absolutely. And but I dated a police sergeant for a while when I lived there, and he lived around other cops, and like his dad was a cop, like his whole family, all of his cousins, it was just like a different vibe. And it's like, yeah, they could probably, do whatever they want to do. They're all going to cover for each other or not. Or, there might be that one person that says something. But,
Yeah.
it's a fascinating culture. It's a job, but it's more than that. It transcends because you really have life or death powers over people, and it's fascinating. I love a good cop movie, and I love Serpico. I'm a movie buff, so I saw that when I was probably too young, but I did see that. I scared the crap out of me.
Well,
Love that movie.
it
Yeah.
was a good depiction of New York at the time, and certainly, I grew up on the South Shore of Staten Island with there were a lot of cops, also a lot of mobsters. Sort of like living cheek by jowl. So that was it was the Serpico Godfather era. It wasn't dull. Let me put it that way.
Oh yeah, always something going on. That's just fascinating. Well, I just wanted to bring this up because I love this quote, and you made sure that we knew you wanted to include this in the book. The quote is, "Everything is money and power, and how to use them both." And that's Diana Vreeland. And I love reading things over and over again and trying to determine, like, what does this mean? So, without spoilers, if you can manage that, tell us why this is important to you to include in this book. Why did you want to include this quote in the book?
I came across that quote in a book called New York, New York, New York, which was a book about the transformation of New York from basically the crime-ridden hellhole of like the 70s and 80s into the gentr, into the city like you can't afford to live there anymore. The total way that money changed everything in New York, and it really was Diana Vreeland said that quote. It was like in the 70s or 80s, but she had sort of like really saw the way things were going to go in the city, and that it was money and power, and the people with money and power were going to, drive a lot of changes, and they were going to get their way. But first, it was kind of like a lot of things had to hit rock bottom, and then, for good or for ill, they were able to change the city, much to their liking.
They sort of tailored the experience for everyone else. It's just that, and it's true. You can, we've seen all the movies. It's like you grease the palms and you get away with whatever. And you haven't touched on politics at all, but it's almost like you'd be talking about the same thing. It's fascinating.
Definitely, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like if we could just swap out politics for the
I
same.
mean, you know, I one of the richest men in the world was mayor of the city for 12 years while the transformation went on. Kind of like enough said right there.
Exactly. Yeah, they're not bringing up any poor people. So you've been a journalist for most of your career, as we've mentioned. Very high power. I mean, these are places we've heard of. So you weren't, writing for the penny saver. What made you want to move into fiction? Like, so you're a really accomplished journalist. What is the allure of fiction for a journalistic mind like yours?
I think there's a chance, it's an opportunity to paint on a broader canvas than a lot of times you have, certainly in newspapers where a lot of times, even at the New York Times, where you can get into more depth than things than you can in a lot of other journalistic outlets, you're still cramped and hemmed in by the amount of space you have. And you can't write, this book is like 80 to 90,000 words. You can't do that in journalism unless you write a long, you write a narrative nonfiction book. But in terms of, daily or even weekly journalism, you can't paint on that broader canvas. And sometimes you feel like you want to.
Did you find it more enjoyable or harder, or what were the contrasts?
I say the contrast is between doing something kind of like, again, really narrow. It's like painting, if you will, painting a miniature or painting a cameo, and then painting a mural. But both of them have, there are things to be said for both of them. But I certainly, for me, after a while, it's my thought is just, I want to do something broader. I want to do something bigger. And at the New York Times, they always encourage you, both writers and editors, to, as go big, to think sweepy. Sweepy is the word they like to use a lot. And in terms of journalism, yeah, you are usually thinking bigger than you are in a lot of other places. But again, maybe go even bigger is my thought. And I like doing that.
You got to stretch out. You got to do, mix stuff up. That's fun. You must be able to stick to the facts so as much as you would have had to. No one's
Well, you
checking.
know, I think Anna Quinlan, I think it was, once had a point, because she's done both too. And she once said, but what's weird is that, she does the journalism, and people think she makes it up, and then she writes novels and people think that's all true. And it's, no, that doesn't work. It doesn't work that way for me.
Because that was like based on my first question. So it's like, oh, how much of this? Where'd you get this story from? Because
Yeah,
I think we just always.
I mean, it's based on a true story. It is, I use that as a stepping off point
Yeah,
for
inspired
this
by.
book.
Well, I mean, every story I've ever told is based on some other factual thing that's happened to somebody. Because it's just there's only so many stories in the world that have happened. Somebody smart said that. I can't remember who it was. So you are the perfect person to ask this. I mean, you're just like the quintessential New York guy. What is it about New York? I mean, there's so many stories. I mean, it feels like you could write 10 stories a day about that city. What is it? What is New York? I mean, everyone in there's I was when I lived there, I just remember thinking like there's at least one, there's more than one, but there's someone from every country in the world lives here, and that's I think the unique thing about it. But maybe you tell me, what is it about New York in particular that makes it such a birthplace for all these stories and the history, and you love the history of New York, so kind of dive into that.
I think, as you point out in your question, it's like the confluence of everything. Everybody from all over the world, there are people from all over the world here, people in all kinds of income levels, people from the richest of the rich to the poorest of the poor. You have every problem you could possibly face is here. And unlike some other places, you can't avoid the problems. I mean, you're walking around the city, you're taking the subway or the bus or whatever, and it's like, if you see a problem, you can't look away, you can't ignore it. It's right there, and you wonder, well, what can we do about this? And it is also, in fact, it's such a media center. This is the media capital, really, of the world. So everything that happens in New York gets amplified. And sent out to the world. But there's also so much money here and so much power. So it's this whole mix and this stew of things that is endlessly interesting. I mean, you're never bored.
That's for sure. I couldn't wait to get there. I was like, oh, the city that never sleeps. Sign me up. I want to be up all night, seeing all the
Yeah.
things going everywhere. And I did. I loved every minute of being there. It was fun. It's just different energy than anywhere else. But I the fact that people from every culture and country live there, they're not just passing through. They live there and they have businesses there, and you can have any kind of cuisine in the world you've ever heard of. I mean, that's why it's just so fascinating to me that everyone coexists. Hopefully, most of the time, okay. To a certain
Sometimes better
degree.
than others, but
To a certain degree. They have to. They have a building next to the other place they don't like.
So what was I've found it, I mean, I just always found it interesting. I mean, certainly, when our daughter was growing up, we had a, and she went to the local public school, and there were people from all over the world here. And I don't know if I should even tell this story, but I know at one point at some birthday party, we had threw for my daughter, which was like 2 or 3, and my parents were there. And I was, telling my dad, I said, well, it's really interesting, because, you have kids from all over the world, from all different kind of countries, different cultures, and, they're all here and they're all mixing together. And my dad looked at me and said, yeah, but none of them are poor. Which is kind of true in this neighborhood. There are a lot of people from all over the world, but there are a lot of them are, business or whatever. A lot of them are working in in finance, in the lower Manhattan or whatever. And Very hardworking people, terrific people.
Yeah, it depends on the neighborhood. And you drive, a mile away, and it's not so much. But that's what's cool about it. Everyone's rubbing up, as you said earlier, rubbing up against each other, and it's just a fascinating place to be. Well, that's why all the good stories come from there, The Godfather, all of them. Anyway, so question five is always sad. Question five: if you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be? Because you are so accomplished, you've done all the things. So, what would you, if you could turn the clock back and give yourself some advice, what would that be?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, I didn't start writing mysteries until I was almost 40 years old. I think maybe I would have started earlier because it's a genre I like to think I have a little bit of talent for. I've certainly always had affinity for it. I mean, I loved the Sherlock Holmes stories when I was a kid. But I never really started, thinking about them, doing them seriously until I was well into my 30s. So I think I, probably would have started earlier on doing that.
That's good advice. I would get going. Don't wait. Get it going. You don't know what tomorrow is. Might as well knock it out of the park today. Very good. So you're just, I mean, it's been, if you put it on Facebook, so I'm assuming it's public. You're retired. You retired from the New York Times.
I retired from the ton. I'm not really retired. I've been busy. I retired about a month ago, but I have been busy ever since then, with the book and a number of other things. So, it's been great, actually.
Yeah, no, most of the people I know that are retired are busier than they were before they retired. So I just mean creative people. They're like, oh, I'll write that novel, or I'll start a new series, or I'll write some short stories. So in that vein, what are you doing? Are you spending your days lounging around? Are you writing? What's going on? What's next?
Writing, promoting the book. We do have to take care of finances. We gotta, so I've been talking to money people about various and such things. We're also talking, my wife and I would like to travel. So we're talking about where we want to go. And also, the holidays are here. We hosted Thanksgiving and we're getting ready for Christmas. And so all of that stuff. And we're also, since we live in New York, my wife and I, we're like, now we can do things. We can like if we like tomorrow we're gonna go see a musical production of A Christmas Carol. We weren't able to do that when we were working, and you're gonna go out to dinner and it's like, oh wow, this is great,
That was the greatest. Yeah, it was funny
Oh
because
no.
when you're working, you're like, I don't get to that. And then family comes to town, you're like, oh yeah, let's obviously go see a show or something. But now that you don't always do the things because it's just there. But that's awesome. You have time to, and then you're living in the best city in the world. I love it there. That'll be fun. Sounds like you got lots. So are you working on the next book? Is this part of a series?
It is part of a series. It's the first of what I am immodestly calling the Divine Trilogy, after the family's at the center of it is named Divine. So this is the first book. The second book, I'm sending it around to get some feedback. It's, I hope, pretty much written. And that is called Special Victim. It is, again, loosely based on the Central Park Jogger case. And the third book is tentatively titled Stop and Frisk, and I've begun that. And I should finish it at some point. But I think I've got I according to the publishing I think according to our deadlines, I think I got more than a year, so that should be fine. No problem.
You're good. You're good. You're fine. You're a journalist. You can whip stuff out real fast. I mean, that's the thing. Whenever journalists turn into authors, because I work with a lot of them, they get that stuff in right on time. There's none of this like, oh, I need an extension. Like, I'm good friends with Hank Phillippi Ryan. She just boom, stuff in your hand. Like the minute you ask, we're like, okay. But she's just used to that grind of getting stuff out. So that's awesome. But you're gonna do great. Well, I love the book, and it's a joy to get to know you better and to work with you on this. And you're just a brilliant guy and brilliant writer, and we're honored to have you.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be working with you, and like I say, this has been great.
Yeah. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day. Go have fun in the city. Go ice skating and do the Rockefeller treat. Do all the things.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sean. You too.
Right. Bye.